The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors, not just across town, but across the country? How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Global Reach, the show that helps your business find opportunities, manage risks, and develop strategies for winning in world markets. Well, with gridlock in the U.S. Congress, courts, regulatory agencies, lately it's been up to companies to take the initiative on systemic reforms that the government can't seem to handle. So today we're going to look at the intersection of good corporate governance, the new culture of corporate transparency and accountability being adopted by some of the leading companies in this country, the intersection with good corporate performance. And then we'll look at the very sharp attack on good governance that are being launched by, of all organizations, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the business meeting place. We're also going to look at whether the U.S. needs something like its Foreign Corrupt Practices Act to apply to domestic political spending, which is the current legal equivalent of political bribery. And finally, we're going to look at how some publicly held U.S. companies are using their shareholders' money to fund resegregation of American politics, often in the face of their stated support of diversity. So what are smart, well-managed companies doing? We're going to find out. I want to tell our listeners that this is our last live broadcast, at least for a while. Global Reach has had 107 guests over the course of 150 shows. And for this last show, I want to welcome back three of my favorite guests who are not coincidentally good friends and who are passionate about one of my favorite themes, shining sunlight on dark money, the intersection between good governance, strong economies, responsive government, and just society. So joining me, and please welcome, are Bruce Fried, president of the Center for Political Accountability, former White House advisor and good governance champion Charles E. M. Kolb, and quality and ethics guru John R. West. Gentlemen, welcome back to Global Reach.
Thank you, Tay.
Thank you.
Tay, it's a pleasure to be with you.
All three of you are champions of good governance, and you've all worked with some of the most productive, successful companies in the U.S. and global companies. But before we plunge into the topic, Charlie, you were most recently president of the French-American Foundation of the U.S., the only non-governmental organization that's dedicated to strengthening the relationship between the U.S. and France. And you've brought together leaders, policymakers, all kinds of professionals, business leaders. You also were really very involved with the press in the two countries. Do you want to just give us some comments on what happened yesterday, the attack on Charlie Hebdo?
Sure. First of all, Tay, let me say I did a short segment on BBC Radio last night, and I'll say today what I said yesterday evening. In times like these very difficult times, we are all French. We are all French today. Just like when 9/11 happened in this country, many of the French said, today we are all Americans. So France was one of the first of three countries to recognize the freedom and independence of the United States. We may not have made it without the French. And we have always been there for each other. Occasional blips along the way, but by and large, each country has supported the other when the chips were down. And let me, if I may, just add a personal note, which I shared with the BBC audience last night. The terrible tragedy in Paris yesterday with Charlie Hebdo brought back to me a personal reminiscence, and that is when I lived in Washington, D.C. when 9/11 happened, and when I finally got home that afternoon, the first people who called me were two of my closest friends in France. They knew that I went to New York almost every week, and they called to make sure that I'd gotten home all right. So it's I tell that story because it really gives a sense of who the French are and how much they care for Americans. And I think that Americans, too, are grieving for our friends in France. I think our hearts go out to certainly the families of those who were killed and injured. And so I think this is going to be a worldwide phenomenon, and we will all come to each other's aid, and we will put this terrible demon back in the box where it belongs.
I want to add something as a, having been a journalist myself, both with this show and when I was with Business International, that really the whole issue of freedom of the press is so very important to us globally. And journalists have been attacked not just in France, but all over the world. And I know at the last gala that you had at the French American Foundation, you had guests who were from an international journalist organization that was dedicated to protecting the freedom of journalists. And I think that's something, and I hope that all of our listeners will be involved in really supporting and protecting journalists around the world, because they are very important.
I think a free press and the courage among journalism are essential for the flourishing of democracy. And, you know, part of what you've done with your programs and your 107 guests is to get into issues of good governance and transparency and accountability. And the press not only in the United States, but around the world, in my view, the press is essential for that endeavor to succeed.
Bruce, John, do you want to chime in with anything?
No, I think Charlie expressed it very well. I mean, it was a really terrible, terrible tragedy, and I think it really bespeaks the real challenges that that France and the other Western countries, the pluralist democracies, face, you know, from these groups that really are very radical and really don't have are not tied into any of the Western values that we cherish.
They're also under assault by governments who really should be protecting them. John?
Well, you know, I think we all need to band together, as was just said, in all countries. And if some people don't realize what we could face, we don't put a clamp on it. All we have to do is look to Nigeria these days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just yesterday, I don't know how many people were taken, but one report said 2,000. I can't believe that's accurate. But anyway, long story short, we have to put a clamp on it, and we can't be too vigilant, and we all have to work together as a team. So I think it's well said what has been said before.
Okay. Let's go back and into good governance, because in a way the freedom of the press is part of a society that has good governance. Bruce and Charlie, you recently had an op-ed in the Washington Post talking about the efforts that you've had to shed sunlight on dark money, and this is a really odd attack by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce claiming that you were trying to destroy free speech and undermining free enterprise. Bruce, could you describe the work of the Center for Political Accountability for us?
The Center for Political Accountability was founded in late 2003 to deal with the whole issue of disclosure and accountability in political spending by companies. You know, the United States has a unique system for financing or underwriting U.S. politics. You know, it relies on contributions from a range of groups, including individuals, labor unions, companies. You know, there had been a real move toward transparency up through the passage of the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act of 2002. But since then, transparency in political contributions and political spending has really come under attack and was seriously undermined by the Citizens United decision in January of 2010, just 5 years ago. The center was created to bring transparency and accountability to political spending by companies. And this is with their corporate funds, funds that, that would go to shareholders. The center has been working with shareholder advocates and other partners to engage companies to urge them to voluntarily disclose their political spending, to adopt board oversight of their spending, and to adopt really sound and transparent decision-making policies on their political spending. And, you know, by taking the voluntary approach, by using corporate governance, by tying this into managing risk, this effort has been very successful in really leading, well over 100 of the leading U.S., top U.S. companies to adopt disclosure and accountability policies on their own.
I think you had 183 of the Fortune 500 at the last count.
Yes, I mean, it's, you know, we measure it both through agreements with companies, and then the center has an index. It's called the CPA-Zicklin Index that benchmarks the top 300 companies on the S&P 500 for their political disclosure and accountability policies. This year, the index will be expanded to the entire S&P 500 list. But the whole movement in the corporate community has been toward transparency, not just with political spending, but with executive compensation, with diversity, in environmental areas, with supply chain management. So, you know, what we're seeing is that there, this movement for transparency has gained tremendous momentum. Political disclosure is part of that.
You remember how we first met was that I was reading the Citizens United decision, Justice Kennedy's decision, and was very struck by his comment that this was, political spending was something that should be disclosed to shareholders. And
yes.
I immediately thought shareholder resolution,
mm-hmm.
and ended up tracking you down because I had found, well, since I do research for a living, I found out that your organization was kind of the leader in working
yes.
on this issue. Charlie, you've also been an advocate for good governance, and you come out of a really, besides the French American Foundation, you really come out of a milieu where you were an advisor to Bush One. You were the head of the Center for Economic Development, which is a corporate think tank. So you've dealt with some of the leaders of U.S. corporations. Why is this so important, this transparency? And I mean, certainly no one's going to accuse you of being a wild-eyed radical, except apparently the chamber.
No. What I would say, Tay, is that transparency is essential to the effective running of market-based economies. And what has surprised me about this debate is the extent to which my conservative friends tend to overlook this fact. And let me give you an example. When the Committee for Economic Development released its first report on campaign finance reform, we said on page one, this, by the way, was in 1999, we said that as business leaders, we prefer to compete in the marketplace and not in the political arena. Now, why is that sentence so important? It's important because look at where we are right now as a country. There have been study after study after study pointing out a gradual decline in recent years in innovation in the American economy. And if you have an upswing in dark money, if you will, particularly if it's coming from corporations, what that means is that these companies are trying to get through their political contributions access and favors that they otherwise feel they can't compete for legitimately in the marketplace. So this whole effort, if transparency is undermined, I would argue that so is market competition and the free market economy, which has characterized the American strength in many of the years since 1945, that is going to be undermined. And I would hope the Chamber of Commerce of all organizations would be on the side of transparency and disclosure, because that's what you need if you want really effective,
yeah.
innovative, productive markets.
Well, apparently not. The Chamber President, Thomas Donahue, has attacked you, has attacked Bruce, has attacked the CPA-Zicklin Index, and basically says that you are the opponents of free speech and free enterprise.
I think it's exactly the opposite, and I would love, I mean, I hope he continues the attacks, because he's simply enabling us to make the case of how this dark money is nothing more, Tay, than rent-seeking. And people who, whether on the left or the right side of the political spectrum, if you believe in competition, you need transparency, you need openness, and you need accountability. And how you can be against that and call yourself a business person in favor of free markets, I simply don't get.
John, let me ask you, you were the assistant to the chief operating officer of Federal Express. You have been an advisor to Swiss Air, to Electrolux, to KPMG. I mean, for any of the organizations that you've advised and worked with, and certainly you've been an advisor to one of the most successful global corporations with FedEx, been helping it to its first National Quality Award. I mean, would they consider that transparency was an enemy of their ability to compete?
Well, not that I know of. You know, it's one thing as a corporation, and it's another thing as, you know, the people managing the corporation. So is certainly from everything we knew, you know, is what was going on in FedEx, for instance. Everything was above board, that contributions were being made both to Democrats and Republicans, that contributions were really being made on, you know, on a personal basis by, instead of a political basis. So as was being spoken before, I think what we need to watch for is that political jargon these days, you know, there's a certain party or both parties that have gone on for years, you know, having a certain stream of jargon that they tout, and, you know, and it really is a cloud that, and so the corporations just need to be public, and we know that these days when the press gets a hold of something that seems wrong, you know, that then everybody gets out into the headlines and everything. So I can tell you what I was doing at FedEx was, I was always trying, as a defensive move, I was being on the offense and proactive too, but I was also always being defensive, not to want to ever get in the headlines for the wrong reason, and for our company to do that.
Tay, this is Charlie. If I could just add a point, and
sure.
Bruce may want to jump in on this. I think that from its inception, the Center for Political Accountability has not been telling companies not to give, okay, to contribute into the political process. What the center has been saying, if you decide to give money through a PAC or through some of the other approaches that have been authorized after Citizens United, if you decide to do that, at least be transparent about it. And that, I think, is a very important point. So if the chamber says that the center and others are trying to shut down the ability of companies to do this, that is not the case. Have I got that right, Bruce?
You're absolutely right. And in fact, I used those exact words when I was at the corporate secretary's annual meeting in Seattle 2 years ago. Brian Cartwright, who had been former general counsel of the Securities and Exchange Commission under Chris Cox, was there. And he was really a proxy for the Chamber of Commerce, and accused us of stifling free speech. And I just made that point. I looked straight at the audience. It was corporate secretaries of the leading corporations. And I said, the center believes that when a company engages in political spending, which it has every right to do under the Constitution, affirmed by the Supreme Court, you do it transparently. And he was, you know, very straightforward, very simple. Do it transparently. Do it, have accountability, so the company knows why it's giving, the purposes of its giving, and make sure that everything is done, you know, to pursue the interests of the company.
You know, maybe what's bothering organizations like the chamber, is that you also push for companies to disclose the political spending they make through organizations like the Chamber, through third parties. Now, we've got to go to break, but when we get back, I want to talk about a couple of things. First of all, what are the problems with outsourcing your political spending to a third party? Some of the problems that companies run into when they have dark money from a candidate or from a politician. And another thing is, even when there is sunlight on the spending, it doesn't always protect the shareholders and the taxpayers. But we'll do that when we come back from break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the show. I'm here with three of my favorite guests, Bruce Fried from the Center for Political Accountability, quality and ethics guru John R. West, and Charlie Cobb, who is a champion of corporate transparency and good governance. So when we went to break, I raised the question of outsourcing your political spending to a third party. Bruce, what's the danger of that?
Oh, the danger is very, very simple. When you outsource your spending, you're turning over these spending decisions to these third-party groups, which means that money can be used in ways that can harm a company's reputation, that can expose it to all sorts of legal action, that can be used in conflict with company business strategies, in conflict with company values. You know, it's very simple. A company loses control. It means that its money basically can pose a threat to the company. Companies, you know, run into this problem when they make payments to trade associations, you know, where they're not involved in the governance and the decision making of the trade association, and when they give money to the groups today known as social welfare organizations. You know, these are the groups also known as 501c4s that collect money anonymously, and because of that, public anonymity, but the whole phenomena of private disclosure, which means, you know, C4 groups that are closely associated with influential elected officials, companies are exposing themselves to the threat of extortion and shakedown. And it really is corrupting not only the economic system of the economy, but it's corrupting of the political system, and it undermines all of the principles of democracy.
Hey, this is Charlie. Can I jump in to follow Bruce on a point here? When you step back and look at this system, this money chase, this shakedown, it's really nutty. And you have to ask yourself the question, who really likes this system? Who would have, if you had to start all over from scratch, who would create a system like this? You go and talk to members of Congress, and they will tell you almost to a person that they don't like having to spend 40 to 60% of their time dialing for dollars. So who really likes it? Who really wins? Certainly the companies. Well, the companies think if they're right about the rent sinking, it's a cheap way to get a legislative fix. But the real winners in this are what I call the campaign finance cottage industry. It's the cottage industry of consultants and pollsters and ad writers and ad buyers and TV and radio placers who make big bucks off of this system. And isn't it just curious that every election cycle, the money coming into the system doubles at a time when inflation has been almost zero? So the money isn't going to the politicians. It's going to the cottage industry that likes a complex system that will suck up and spend as much money as it can raise. And when you look at it, it's absolutely nuts. The companies that participate, as Bruce says, run a reputational risk of losing control. Members of Congress don't like to do it. We need to step back and think about massive change. That's going to be hard to do with Senator McConnell now, a Senate Majority Leader, because he's a main opponent. But it's something the country needs to think seriously about.
We may have to see it in some of the states. I mean, you've been talking on a national level. In New York State, we have 63 state Senate seats. Do you know what the political spending was, the donations this past cycle? Over $60 million. That's nearly $1 million a seat for a part-time job.
And that's in the state legislature.
That's just in the state Senate, yeah.
Well, this problem is also creeping into state judicial races, as I think you know.
And that is even worse. I mean, the attorneys general and the judicial essentially is buying the legal system.
I think the New York Times has really done an absolutely phenomenal job in exposing the corruption that you have with the state attorneys general. You know, it's an absolute travesty that justice is basically bought and sold, really, or put out for rent. You know, Charlie talked about judicial elections. It's corrupting of the whole system of justice in this country. And, you know, here you have a case of money running amok. And one of the things that the Center for Political Accountability has found is that, you know, there are a growing number of companies that are placing restrictions on how their money can be used politically. You know, they would be telling trade associations, you know, do not use any of the money in our dues payments for political purposes. You know, teeth need to be put into that to assure that it has real impact. But the fact is companies are beginning to adopt these policies. And you're also seeing, you know, there are some companies that are beginning to eschew contributions to state judicial races. Merck is one. And I think, you know, it's a company that deserves a great deal of credit for that, you know, because they recognize that justice really needs to be dispassionate and, frankly, not tainted with money.
I will dispute you on one point. You talked about companies using their money. As a shareholder in a number of companies, which means beneficial owner, it's my money. It's the shareholder's money. It is not the company's money, and it's not, you know, the CEO's money. They're spending the shareholder's money, the owner's money.
And I stand corrected on that, and I appreciate that because, you know, the problem is that that the top executives view it as their money and are making the decisions, you know, based on what they feel, you know, is in their interests.
As we heard when R.A.G. Monks was here with his book Citizens Disunited.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Tay, this is Charlie. There's another point that can be made here. I said, I think, at the beginning of the show that transparency was important from an economic perspective if you want to have transparent and effective marketplace transactions. There's another point, and that is transparency is key because the money going into our political system relates directly to elections, which are the most important aspect of our democracy. Citizens choosing who will govern them is the very heart and soul of American democracy. And I would point out that elections are public goods. They are not private auctions. And that, in my view, is another very strong reason for why the money, all the money coming into the system that influences directly and indirectly how elections are carried out should be disclosed. Because it's a public function. It is not a private, you know, some people may think it's a private auction that you're getting a channel over the airwaves. But that's not what we are talking about here.
I would take it one step further. With your argument, it argues that really elections should be funded by the citizens, not by private interest. It should be funded through taxpayer money, public funding of elections, or what I like to call voter-owned elections, rather than billionaire-owned elections.
On that point, absolutely. It's going to take us a while to get there, but I agree. The logic, in my view, is compelling.
I've already been at this for almost 20 years.
Now, this is Bruce. I just want to add one other thing that I think is something very important to consider. That, you know, we have a situation today where the types of checks and balances that we used to have, let's say, the types of checks and balances that John Galbraith really laid out in his book, The Theory of Countervailing Power, are no longer there. And it means that money today speaks even louder in terms of influencing decisions. And I think that's why political transparency and accountability is so important, because by bringing political spending in the open and by making accountability a central part of it, one would hope that it would bring in some judgment, some caution, some balance in terms of how a company goes ahead and makes political spending decisions, that you have much more thought given, much more, you know, addressing of the issues of risk that we are discussing on this program, you know, that looks at the impact of the spending not just on the company but on the broader society and economy in which the company is operating and which the company really needs if it's going to be able to thrive.
Yes, it would be nice if people could actually, as Henry Ford knew, be able to afford companies' products. But you mentioned economy, and one of the things that you look at, or I look at, is that actually political spending in terms of the policy outcomes is distorting the economy, because you get certain policies that are not necessarily in the interests of the economy as a whole, and it also distorts the way the companies who don't want to spend and aren't spending, it distorts how they can perform. I mean, you know, we talk about the companies that do make the donations, but the fact is, what is it, an honest politician is the one who stays with the highest bidder?
You let these distortions accumulate over time, Tay, and you end up with something called the U.S. tax code.
Yes.
And some of your listeners will remember that in 1986, a Republican president, Ronald Reagan, working closely with two Democrats, Bill Bradley in the Senate and Dan Rostenkowski in the House, managed to get through tax reform, which lowered the rates and broadened the base. It got that tax reform swept away a lot of these little loopholes and other benefits that had accumulated over the years, and that's what we need to do now. Because we have one of the most anti-competitive tax systems and a very inefficient way of collecting taxes that you will find in any developed country in the world. So it is a distortion, and it's hurting the economy. It's hurting our competitiveness. And I'm hoping that in President Obama's remaining 2 years, he will find a way to work with Republicans and Democrats in the Congress to do what Reagan and Rostenkowski and Bradley did in 1986. It would be a really important aspect of his legacy, and it would really help the economy.
Charlie, I think that when you look at the 1986 tax reform, that was a unique experience that we had, maybe almost sui generis. You know, if you recall, you know, coming out of the House, the tax reform, the tax bill, the tax reform was, I think, a monstrosity. And fortunately, Bob Packwood, who at that point was chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, realized that he had to go back to square one. You know, he was one of the real heroes of this.
That's right.
Because he acted as a statesman, a very unique experience.
Well, with all the money flowing in now, it makes it really difficult, because part of what
that money flows to do
is to keep the status quo. People like the breaks that they've gotten, and this is going to mean reform is going to be that much harder.
What is interesting is that companies seem to prefer to make political donations to paying taxes. John, back in the break, you were making some really interesting points about revenue and taxation and what's going on.
Well, I think that, you know, there, you can say, people can say, well, we don't want taxes, we don't want to raise taxes. And so what I was saying basically is, well, don't raise taxes, but we have to raise revenue, okay? So a lot that goes on in politics today is the stance is taken one way or another, and but then they just sit there and do absolutely nothing. It's, you know, from a quality perspective, if we were a company, we would find something to do to fix the problem and improve it and not worry about the semantics about what we're calling it. So that was... that's my point, is this country and a state like I live in desperately needs to raise revenue, and call it what you will, but we've got to raise the revenue or else, you know, we're just not in financial good stead.
So let me ask you, since revenues have been starved on a number of government levels, federal, state, even local, can the U.S. stay competitive in a center for world business without doing something about funding its infrastructure? Anybody want to take that?
Well, I can, I mean, what's basically going on, and we see it every now and then, like in Minnesota a year or two ago, is, you know, when you look at the statistics about the, just look at bridges alone in this country, about the, you know, terrible state that they're in, and, you know, pay me now or pay me later, as the Ram commercial used to say. You know, we really have to get after infrastructure. It's really dangerous to our populace in general, to cross a lot of bridges anymore. And we absolutely have to fix that. We're like shooting ourselves in the foot by not doing anything about it. And so, you know, it's, I mean, we've got gridlock here, like in my city, and the mass transit system has been pretty stale and steady for, what, about the last 10 or 20 years, not making any progress, yet the populace has probably doubled.
Do you even get some of the companies that are, you know, very anti-tax, that are so reliant on roads that, you know, I think about Walmart, which has had one of the best logistics systems, not to mention FedEx. You know, what do they do when we have bridges falling down under their trucks?
Well, Tay, this is Charlie. I want to dissent a little bit, if I could, from one aspect of this discussion, if that's okay. And my dissent is based on the couple of years that I spent in the federal government where I oversaw the budget for the U.S. Department of Education. Back then, it was about $25 billion. But here's my point. Yes, we need to spend more on infrastructure. But why is it that once the government program is created, it almost never goes away? I suspect that most of your listeners, depending on their age, their household expenditures today are substantially different from what they were maybe 10 or 20 years ago. That's because over time, people's needs, their values, etc., change. With the federal government, we just keep adding on and adding on and adding on. We very rarely go through and eliminate stuff. And so I am a big believer in investing in basic research and infrastructure and energy, but we should also take a very clear, cold look at things that we spend money on, that we've been spending money on for decades, that aren't producing anything. So my point is, before we spend more, let's figure out how to stop spending on stuff that is useless.
Amen.
And then reprioritize, just as households have to do, and spend money on things that will produce the types of returns that we want going forward. I mean, a nation, just like a household, is dynamic. And the federal government doesn't do that. And one of the reasons it doesn't do it is because there are associations by the thousands in Washington that want to keep the existing federal grants or other payments that they get that they've been receiving for decades. So before we spend more, let's look at what we're spending and spend better.
So zero-based budgeting, and I've always thought we should perhaps apply a similar thing to the regulatory system, since we have laws upon laws and they will from time to time conflict with each other. So a company gets damned if it does, damned if it doesn't.
Well, my friend Philip Howard has written quite eloquently on this topic, and I believe Philip has the notion that there should be an automatic sunset for most regulations, that they should have to be reviewed before they're renewed. And I think that's a healthy aspect of American democracy, and I think, frankly, it can be done in a bipartisan way.
You know, I was at a meeting of the Chemical Marketers Association some years ago, and actually showed me the laws which were coming out of the EPA, which is an organization I support wholeheartedly, but there were laws coming out of the EPA and the Department of Labor where literally they were in conflict. They directed companies to do two opposite things, and if they did one, they were in contravention of the law. If they did the other, they were contravening. So you need to look at all of those. We need a saner system. Of course, the lawyers might not like it. Got to go to break. Now, when we come back, do we need a Foreign Corrupt Practices Act for U.S. political spending? And I really want to talk about this other question that you brought up with the Mother Jones article, the fact of the companies that are funding the resegregation of American politics. And I'm wondering if any of those 183 companies that signed up with you are also doing the other. But we got to go to break now, so we'll take that up when we get back.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to our final segment of our final sob show. I am here with Bruce Fried from the Center for Political Accountability, good governance champion Charlie Cobb, and quality ethics guru John R. West. And John, during the break, you brought up a really interesting point about whether government should be managed like corporations. Do you want to repeat that for our listeners?
Well, my point was that there are basically three levels of political appointees at the top of each of the cabinet agencies, and that gets us into deep trouble, I think. First of all, and I'll be quick about this, when a new party takes over the White House, it takes a full year sometimes for those three layers to be filled, and I can remember back when there was a change, I had USPA as one of my first customers as a consultant, and we were going along fine, and then all of a sudden, everything switched in the White House, and literally it was a year before we got going again on a good path that we had started on. So I think we need we need good management throughout the government and to have a better country, but I don't think we can do that unless we have professionals at all layers of every agency.
And as we also discussed it at the break, including in our ranks of ambassadors, and it'd be nice if, for both our national interests and for our commercial interest, if we would stop appointing ambassadors who know nothing about the countries they're going to and put professionals in there. But I want to go on to...
What we do say is we appoint people who are called bundlers, who have been massive mega fundraisers for the presidents who then appoint them to these very important, in many instances, diplomatic posts. Contrast that with the French, who have a career diplomatic corps, and their ambassadors, believe it or not, can speak languages other than French.
I'll give you a case in point, and I know about this personally, and I won't say what country, and I won't say who or anything. But right now, a federal agency is investigating another federal agency that is in another country, yet through the U.S. Embassy, is there's someone within the embassy charging about $40,000 per visa for foreigners that want to come to the U.S. And this is a U.S. employee in a U.S. embassy. And that's just my point about management. If there were professional management, I don't think things like that could be happening.
Now, that sounds like a good use for the U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, but I may be off on that legally. But brings me back to the point, do we need the equivalent of a U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act for the U.S. to govern political donations by companies, our legalized bribery?
Well, I think, this is Bruce, I think, you know, there are some people who have pointed out that, you know, in that there is a real sort of contradiction between the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act and our practices in the United States. And I think that it is a contradiction that that business really should focus on. Charlie, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I also sit on the board of, in addition to Bruce's organization, I sit on the board of Transparency International USA. And Transparency International has frequently criticized other countries for their lack of transparency, and I'm pleased to say that the TIUSA in recent years has been looking at some of our own practices here in the United States. The Foreign Corrupt Practices Act really penalizes quid pro quo bribery, if you will. And I remember some years ago when Senator McConnell and Senator McCain were having a debate on the Senate floor, Senator McConnell challenged John McCain and said, okay, where is the evidence of quid pro quo bribery? And in fairness to Senator McConnell, he was right. It's very rare. I mean, there are politicians dumb enough to take bribes. But what's happening here is really insidious. We have a legalized system of influence peddling and access buying. And to give you one example, I remember in Chicago at an event with the Committee for Economic Development, on some of these topics, I asked two executives from Exelon and American Electric Power, which, by the way, are excellent companies. They believe in transparency. They try to make public their political contributions. I asked these two executives why they made political action committee contributions. And they both said, we make PAC contributions so that we can have access to congressional staff. Straight up. I was outraged. I mean, first of all, I applaud their candor. But basically, we have created a system whereby companies think they have to pay tips to get in the door to have access to congressional staff, who, by the way, are paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. It is an outrageous situation. And it puts us on a slippery slope towards behavior which is typical of third world countries that we chastise and go after under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. So we need to practice what we preach and end this system, which is really an embarrassment.
How do we end it? Well, I guess partly, Bruce, through your voluntary system.
I mean, the voluntary system is the only system that really is working today. You know, you have the blockage of legislative efforts to address campaign spending. The Federal Election Commission has been shut down for for quite a few years. I think companies are recognizing that for their own self-protection and their own self-interest, that disclosure and accountability have become essential. It really has become a corporate governance standard. But the fact is, in the end, you need uniformity. There's a proposed rulemaking at the Securities and Exchange Commission that would require companies to report their political spending with Treasury funds. You know, that would be the payments to trade associations, payments to C4s, you know, all of the expenditures that they make with those funds. And it's a rulemaking that should have moved forward. Unfortunately, the Obama administration named a chair of the SEC who represents, more of the corporate viewpoint than the public viewpoint on this. And so the chair, Mary Jo White, has bottled up any action on this rule.
Really,
I think that would be very important toward, bringing this type of uniformity, the level playing field, by the way, that some companies want. There are some major companies that really want to see a rule because it would create this level playing field that would bring all of the spending out into the open. And I think, as Charlie talks about, would really strengthen the competitive marketplace. So I think, right now, voluntary disclosure is the route that we need to take to be able to at least get some action until the climate changes and the governance changes in Washington.
I would go again to say, just as I did before, that Mary Jo White is taking the corporate management perspective, not the corporate shareholder. I mean, not even the public, but she is not even taking the public shareholder, the corporate shareholder point of view.
And that's a real crisis at the SEC, that you don't have the SEC representing or viewing its mission as protecting the public investor. It's protecting management.
Listen, I'm going to break into this because we've only got 4 minutes left, and I want to go to this issue of companies that are funding the resegregation of the American political map, who have done so mm-hmm. since the census, because I think that's really serious. And some of these are consumer-facing companies. Some of these are companies that have strong statements of diversity in their employee regulation. But this is really quite something. And this was the article that you sent me, Andy Kroll and Mother Jones, but Altria,
correct,
AT&T, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Citigroup, Comcast. I mean, some of these are really, Walmart are consumer-facing companies. I mean, not only do they have this employee diversity issue,
mm-hmm.
but they are serving consumers. We've got, 43 million African-American consumers and 55 million Hispanics, and yet they are
funding.
You also
have Comcast on
we've
that
got
list,
like
by the way.
Pardon?
Your Comcast is one of the companies, too.
And Comcast. We've got 3 minutes, so, Bruce, you brought up the article. You get the first comment. I have to be short.
No, I think, very, very, clearly, companies really have to, put their values and their money, put their money where their values are. And in this case, there's a real conflict. And I think this is part of the crisis of money in politics.
Tay, I would add, this is Charlie, I certainly hope that what is happening here is not occurring in a knowing fashion. It would surprise me. I mean, you look at the list of companies, these are blue chip companies, these are, for the most part, excellent companies, and I suspect there may be a right-hand, left-hand issue, and again, it gets to the point Bruce raised earlier about the risk to which a company exposes itself when it gets into this murky business. It would surprise me if these companies were knowingly doing this. I mean, I've read all of the diversity statements, and I've worked with companies that have taken ethics and disclosure and diversity seriously, and I have no reason to doubt that these companies don't stand by, what they're saying in terms of their commitment to diversity. So they should take a – this is another
they
reason
they
the company taking a hard look at where this money is going.
Yep.
They may be committed to
right,
their
Charlie.
Employee diversity, but the fact that they are unknowingly funding the resegregation, I wonder. You have a Walmart that is anti-union and has been at the forefront of, some of the ultra-conservative political pressure. You have Citi, and its most obvious policy was to undercut the financial reforms, you know, and put the taxpayer at risk for swaps again. So I wonder if this is completely unknowingly on Citi's part.
Your points are well taken, but once you get into areas of race relations, which have been a very important issue for this country over many decades, I think that's an altogether different issue than, say, a Dodd-Frank, if you will. And I know that's a qualitative point. And I said I think most of these companies, I hope, are engaged in this, and it would be a surprise to them, at least to the leadership of these companies, to see this. But I could be wrong.
And we've got about 1.5 minutes left. You each get 20 seconds. John, last comment.
Well, I would just say in regard to the last comment, as I said before, whether knowingly or not knowingly, you know, within the last, 2 years, a son of a CEO of a famous national company made a social comment on a certain group of people against them, and did they ever go down in public esteem? So any company that doesn't think, you know, these days that the public is out there watching, they put themselves at great risk, whether knowingly or not knowingly, whether they do anything socially wrong.
Bruce, 1 second.
I think today what's paramount is meaningful accountability by companies for their political spending. Transparency and accountability go hand in hand.
And I'm fascinated that you also include supply chain management. Charlie.
Ted, I just want to thank you for providing this public forum, this debate that you've done now, over 107 guests. I don't know how many shows, but I look forward to your being back. And just thank you very much. It's been an honor to be with you every single time.
Thank you so much. And I love the three of you in your involvement.
Tay, I want to reiterate what Charlie said. You know, you have provided a valuable service, and you're a national treasure.
Oh, thank you. Let me just tell our audience, our archive will stay up on the Voice America website, on my Global Reach homepage at voiceamerica.com/show/1984 until Monday, January 19th. We have downloaded all the shows, and in February, I expect to have the archive of our shows available again on my company's website, which is www.globalreach-sbi.com. And if you want to reach me, trr@globalreach-sbi.com. I want to thank you all for being part of the Global Reach audience, with special thanks to my terrific guests, the wonderful Voice America staff, and to all of you who have shared your advice, your questions, and your opinions with Global Reach Winning in World Market. And on behalf of my guests, Bruce Fried, Charlie Cobb, and John West, we want to thank you, and we want to wish you all great success in extending your global reach.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.